Wow, what a bargain, eh? For those of you who don't know, my mum died when I was very young, and my first few years I was brought up by my nana. And my nana would use this phrase all the time. Oh, what a bargain. And I can remember my granddad saying, yeah, but how much did it cost? He goes, yeah, but it was a bargain. And I think I've inherited some of my nana through my dad. I love a bargain. Do you? Yeah. Any of you love a bargain? I mean, I know that Jason and I... Where's Jason gone? Jason and I will often have conversations about the bargain we've just got. Or talk to Richard about what he gets on Temu. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's best. I think he's probably Temu's best customer. And I love haggling. For you, before I became was a church pastor, I was a salesman. And though I say it myself, I was quite good at what I did. I went on all sorts of courses to learn about negotiating and how you negotiate properly and how you work out. And it works both for buyers and sellers. And so when we went to Zambia a few years back, I was employed by some people of the team. I didn't get paid. Can you come with me? Can you help me haggle for this item I want to buy? I used to love, I still do, love haggling. I could tell you. Just now, think about what's the best bargain you ever got? Can you picture it in your mind? Do you want to go back? For Sue and I, it was one actually Sue got, and I still can't believe it. We were going to the Lake District, and we wanted to stay and do an overnight stay on the Friday nights just to break the journey. And she said, I found this hotel. She said, it's only £24.50 for the night. I said, just book it. Just book it. It's a bargain. So we booked it, and we turned up at the address, and I looked at this hotel, and I said, are you sure you've got the right address? I mean, it was gorgeous. And we went in, they said, oh, Mr. Jason, yes, expecting you. And they showed us to the room. Someone carried our cases for us. I'm not used to that. And put us in. And there's this suite with these wonderful windows overlooking the sea. I'm thinking, we've definitely not paid for this. And then we were shown down to breakfast the next morning. I looked and saw how much breakfast was. Breakfast for one person was more than we paid for the night. So I went to reception. I said, just want to check, do we owe you anything? She said, no, sir. She said, when you booked this, it was our error. There were a couple of zeros missing off the price, and we've decided to honour it. We had breakfast. You see, bargains grab us, don't they? We love a good bargain. But if you follow money-saving expert Martin Lewis, he's got a mantra. And he said, when it comes to bargains, you need to ask yourself three questions. Do I need it? Can I afford it? And could I get it cheaper somewhere else? I will come back to those questions. But for start with, if you think the Bible doesn't have anything to say about grabbing a bargain, you're wrong, because in Proverbs, it says the buyer haggles over the price saying it's worthless. Then he brags about getting a bargain. A real bargain is where both the seller and the buyer are happy. So why am I talking about bargains? Why am I talking about buying and giving? Because I think sometimes we need to recognize that when we come to God, it's actually going to cost us. And we don't want to give God half measures, do we? Well, I hope you don't want to give God half measures. I don't. And I came across two stories that are familiar to me. The first one is Abraham is traveling through Hebron, was then Kiriath Arba, now we would call it Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Sarah, his wife, dies. She's 127 years old, no great surprise. But he wants to bury his wife. And he says to the elders at the place, you know, I need to bury my wife, I need a place. And they go, no, don't you worry about a thing. You more than let us give you somewhere to bury Sarah. And he says, no. This is quite small writing, but I just want to catch this. And he says, no, since you're willing to help me in this way, be so kind as to ask Ephron, son of Zohar, to let me buy his cave at Machpelah down at the end of his field, and I will pay the full price in the presence of witness, so I have a permanent place to bury my family. Ephron was sitting there among the others, and he said to Abraham, as the others listened, speaking publicly before all the Hittite elders of the town, no, my lord, he says, please listen to me. I will give you the field and the cave here in the presence of my people. I give it to you. Go and bury your dead. Now, I wonder if that was you and I, would we go, bargain, got the field for nothing? No. Abraham bows low and he says, listen to me. I will buy it from you. Let me pay the full price of the field so I can bury my dead there. And Ephron answered Abraham, my lord, please listen to me. The land is worth 400 pieces of silver. Hey, what's that between friends? Go ahead, bury your dead. So Abraham agreed to the price. He paid 400 pieces of silver, and the transaction was witnessed by the elders. Abraham was not willing to allow such a significant moment to be cheapened. This was his family. This was his wife. This was not just a burial place for Sarah, but it would be for generations. He paid the full price. Then I want to skip forward. This is 1 Chronicles 21 and verse 18. Just to give you some background, David, the great King David, has really gone against God, and he's called for a census of all the people, even though he knew it was wrong to do it. And the sense, because he does this, God starts taking out retribution against him for being wrong, and he calls there to be a severe plague to come upon the people. And the Lord told Gad, that's one of the prophets, to instruct David to go up and build an altar on the threshing floor of Arachnua the Jebusite. So David went up to do what the Lord commanded him. When Arachnua saw David approaching, he left his threshing floor and he bowed before David with his face to ground. And David said to him, let me buy this threshing floor from you at its full price. Then I will build an altar to the Lord and he will stop the plague. Arachnua says, take it. My lord, the king, use it as you wish. I will give the oxen for the burnt offerings and the threshing boards for the wood to build a fire on and wheat for the grain offering. I will give it all to you. But King David replied, no, I insist on buying it for the full price. I will not take what is yours and give it to the Lord. I will not present burnt offerings that have cost me nothing. So David gave him 600 pieces of gold in payment, and he built an altar there to the Lord. He sacrificed burnt offerings and peace offerings, and when David prayed, the Lord spoke, the plague was put a stop. David recognized something about, we don't cheapen what we give to God. We don't accept that it's a bargain. No, this is, I want to pay the full whack. When you look at the way the sacrificial system worked, if you read through Leviticus, you'll see that they were encouraged not to bring a lamb with a defect, not to bring something with a broken leg. Bring your best. When they talked about tithing and offerings, it wasn't a bring what you've got over. It's bring the first fruits. Bring the very best of what you've got. Give God the first fruits so that you're honoring him with the best. So the first question I've got for us, and these are kind of uncomfortable questions, and I ask them of myself just as much as I ask them of you. Do we bring God our best? Or do we bring him what we've got left? Do we say, I'm doing this and this and this, and well, if I get time, I'll squeeze God in at the end? Do we say, Oh, I've got my wages. I'm going to spend it on this, this, this. If there's anything left, I'll give God some. Or do we put God first? They're uncomfortable questions. But you know, I think they're questions we need to ask because we want to be more like David, don't we? I hope that we have a heart after God that says, I don't want to give God something that hasn't cost me because he's given everything for me. Where this whole talk started was on these next two very short parables that Jesus told. It comes in the book of Matthew, chapter 13, verse 45 to 46. And it's, Jesus says this. He said, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man discovered hidden in a field. And in his excitement, he hid it again and he sold everything he owned to get enough money to buy that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant on the lookout for choice pearls. And when he discovered a pearl of great value, he sold everything he owned and he bought it. A field. When I read these, you'll know the way my mind works now. I think, I wonder how much a field costs today. If I wanted to go and buy a field, what would it cost? Thankfully, we have Google. And whereas Google can't give me an exact answer, the average field in the United Kingdom is 24.7 acres. And the average cost of an acre depends whether there's likely to be planning permission, depends how much road access there is, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the average field with zero chance of planning, with zero road access for agricultural use, is £271,700. Now, imagine you've been detecting and you've got a chance to be by the field. You've got to sell a fair few bits and pieces, haven't you, before you can go and buy that field. Or what about pearls? I thought, what's a pearl going to cost? What's a pearl of great price or a pearl of great value? Well, thankfully, these fishermen found one. This is a saltwater pearl, which are the more expensive. It's a particular colour. It's roughly 10 mil in diameter. And this particular pearl was found by two Thai fishermen who were subsistence fishermen. And they found a buoy floating. It had become detached. And on it were three oyster shells. So they thought they'd look inside and see what they had. One of them had this particular pearl in it. This pearl sold for £250,000. They were made for life. Imagine what they would have given up for that pearl. And you can see where I'm going this. I wonder what we would do. Well, I've also got another story, much closer to home. I wonder if anyone can tell me who this chap is. Thank you. Yes, it is. This is James Howell. He's from Newport in South Wales. And he was one of the first people in the UK to what they call mine Bitcoin, cryptocurrency. I know zero about this. But in the early days of Bitcoin, he was one of the first to mine 5 or 10 of these things. And he had them on a Bitcoin key, which he kept by his computer. And one day, in 2013, his girlfriend very helpfully tidied his office. And the Bitcoin is at the bottom of a landfill site in Newport. If you don't believe it, here are they. It's currently worth £600 million. £600 million. He's already taken...
Sorry, I saw that. I was like, man, you can buy the entire landfill.
He wants to buy the entire landfill. He has already got, he's already gone to court to try and get permission to get a team on site with the right equipment. He will go to almost any length. It doesn't mention a wife or a girlfriend. But the thing is, he is trying everything. He's currently got a consortium of big businessmen trying to raise enough money, because they've now closed the tip, to buy it. This is a real example, isn't it, of someone who could go to any length to get what is contained within that field. I wonder, what about us? We've got a treasure in Jesus. We have got the bargain of the century, in as much as we can have eternal life. We can have our sins forgiven. We can be made just as if we'd never done anything wrong in our lives, and have free access to the God who made it and created the universe. What are we prepared to do to make sure that we can access that treasure? In the Gospel of Luke, it says this: a large crowd was following Jesus, and he turned around and said to them, "If you want to be my disciple, you must, by comparison, hate everyone else, your father, your mother, your wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even your own life. Otherwise, you cannot be my disciple if you do not carry your own cross and follow me. You cannot be my disciple. But don't begin until you count the cost." Really interesting here, isn't it? For who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money. And then everyone would laugh at you and they would say, "There's the person that started the building and couldn't afford to finish it." Or, what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000, I've got an army of 10,000, can they defeat your army of 20,000 marching against him? And if he can't, he will send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. So you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own. And the purpose of this particular sort of speech was sent, you've got to make this calculation, folks. It's going to cost you everything. You wouldn't start building a house, would you, if you didn't know how much it was going to cost you? You wouldn't go to war with 10,000 if you knew the other person had got 20. You need to weigh up, what are you doing when you follow Jesus? Now, the danger here is that you can say, "Well, I'll certainly think about it." And then you do something that I'm very good at. I've got a degree in procrastination. You never finished the course, no. But we're good, aren't we? We're good at saying, "I need to make a decision, but I won't do it." As some of you will know around here, one of my bits of counseling advice is just make a decision. Whatever it is, make a decision. Sometimes the very fact that we're not making a decision one way or the other just cripples us. But then, you see, you come to this verse, which is Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 4. And it says, "Farmers who wait for perfect weather never plant. If they watch every cloud, they never harvest." We need to be people who make decisions. I remember a very wise person, when Sue and I got married, said, "Do not wait until you can afford it before you have children." You'll never be able to afford it. Do not wait until sometimes we need to make decisions. You can imagine a farmer looking out over a field going, am I going to harvest it today or not? They just crack on. They don't wait to see whether, you know, the rain is going to water the seeds in the next 2 days. They just get on with it. So, what is the bargain we've got? Well, it could be something that you bought. My jacket. It was a bargain. It could be something you bought cheaply. Or, what about something that's very, very expensive that lasts and lasts and lasts? As the old Stella Artois advert used to say, quality is not expensive, it's priceless. Or it could be something that's completely free, but costs you everything. And that's what our salvation is. That's what our life with Jesus is. That's what happens when we come to God and we give him everything. We get far more than we could ever hope or imagine back. Because that's what Jesus does for us. He even offers us completely free as a bonus, as a sign-on, to be filled with the Holy Spirit. As a deposit of what is to come. This is even the full lot. This is a deposit. So we sang in the songs. Fiona, great choice of songs this morning. Great choice of songs. Line in that last song we sang. I offer this heart, O God, completely to you. My soul, Lord, to you surrendered. All I have is yours. That's the only place we can start at. You can try bargaining with God, but believe me, he's done the negotiation course one above you every time. So, do you need to make a decision? Have you never said yes to Jesus for the first time? Have you never said, God, I want to do it your way then. From out. My way's not worked. I'll do it your way. If you haven't, today's a great day to do it. And if you've already done that and you go, yeah, I got that bit sorted. Well, the more dangerous question, I guess, is do we bring God the best or do we bring him what we've got left? Are we like David saying, I don't want to offer God something unless it has cost me? Yes, I will always watch the bargain rails. I'll always see whether I can do a deal. But sometimes the deal is so good that you don't haggle. And that's what it's like with God. The deal is so good, you don't haggle. I remember being in the market in Zambia with my fistful of kwacha, and we're haggling over 50 kwacha, 100 kwacha, 1,000 kwacha, whatever it was. And suddenly I realized, I'm talking about 20 pence here. This is pointless. Have it. If we're trying to do a deal with God, let's just accept this deal is too good to miss out on. Let's give God everything because it really is the best bargain you will ever have in your life and worth giving everything for. Thank you.